Up next on Opening Move, host Scott Mace speaks with Brian Kapuch. He talks about Asterisk, the open source PBX, from IT Conversations. Hello, this is Doug Kay, the executive producer of IT Conversations, and today I'm excited to bring you another edition of Opening Move with Scott Mace. IT Conversations is underwritten by listener donations. Our audio content is delivered by Limelight Networks, the content delivery network for online broadcasts, music, movies, and software downloads, taking the cost and complexity out of internet distribution on the web at www.limelightnetworks.com. And now, here's the host of Opening Move, Scott Mace.
Welcome to Opening Move at IT Conversations. Scott Mace here again at OSCON 2005 in Portland. My guest today is Brian Kapuch. He's the department chair of the computer science department at St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, Indiana. He's currently writing a book for Addison Wesley about Asterisk, the new open source voice over internet protocol solution. He's also head of Asterholics.org and has been described as the Alpha Asterisk Geek. Hi, Brian.
Howdy do.
So tell me about Asterisk and how you got involved with it.
I did a sabbatical from my teaching position in 2001 and had the freedom during that time frame to play around quite a bit. And at that point, we had gotten a grant to do multimedia over wireless from a foundation at the college where I teach. And in the research that I was doing for that project, I stumbled onto a page that described Vonage, which was a telephone service, and I signed up for it. I was, I think, one of their first 100 or 200 customers back when they first started up, and began to read about voice over IP and realized there was a lot of stuff going, and fell into a website that pointed to Asterisk and installed Asterisk. That was a changing moment in my life. Since I started playing around with Asterisk, I couldn't believe what it would do. And secondly, I began to see it as my ticket to freedom from the local incumbent telephone company, where I live in a very small town where the telephone company is actually owned by a gentleman and his brother. And they are sort of a classic poster child for the way that telcos squeeze their customers and give them nothing and charge them a fortune for it. And so I now only make the tiniest fractions of my phone calls on the telephone network. I do almost everything through Asterisk, through voice over IP. And just one thing led to another, and I began to put up Asterisk servers. I came back to the school where I teach, and we put Asterisk in there, and then we got another grant to buy voice over IP equipment. I love to play with technology, and this has been a technology I've learned pretty well, and I am also the maintainer of the Asterisk CVS tree for the WRT Linksys WRT54GS, which is a $75 embedded product that you can buy at any Radio Shack store or Best Buy or anything like that. And we have Asterisk successfully running on that, and I maintain the CVS head version of Asterisk for that platform.
When you hauled all this IP equipment into where you work and where you were going to install it, what did the telco people there and the people who run the traditional phone systems, what did they think of all that?
I hate to say it, but here goes Kapuch again. I've disrupted quite a few things at the college where I teach, and so far we haven't replaced the existing PBX that is there. It's mostly been something as part of our academic mission. But one of my graduates now is working at Digium, which is the company that sponsors Asterisk. Another one this summer is working up in Chicago, where he installed a pretty good-sized system for a set of traders for the Chicago Board of Trade. And in general, it's turned out to be kind of being in the right place at the right time, that it's been an incredible learning opportunity for my students, which has then opened the doors to lots of things for both the college and my students. And so I see that as the primary thing that I've done with Asterisk, as well as being able to help in events like this to take the technology and bring it out and try to expose more people to it and to what it can do and to where it's going to go, because I think Asterisk has a potential, even though it's right now a pretty burgeoning phenomenon. I think we're only at the very earliest parts of its adoption. I really do think it's going to be a completely disruptive product out in the world and will someday be as commonplace as Apache or Linux or any of the other big products that we see in the open source world.
So for people who really don't know what voice over IP can do, how does it work? I mean, I thought IP wasn't really supposed to be carrying voice calls.
Well, first, I need to mention, this is a common misconception, is that Asterisk is only voice over IP. Asterisk is a complete telephone service that can handle legacy PSTN type interfaces as well as voice over IP. So one of the first things I tell people is that Asterisk is more than just voice over IP. But in response to your question directly, it turns out to be that with the advent of more and more people getting broadband connections, that the limitations that we saw with IP telephony in the good old days back 5 and 6 years ago have basically, I wouldn't say been entirely eliminated, but certainly have been mitigated by the fact that pretty good bandwidth is now available to quite a few people. And as long as you've got good bandwidth without a huge amount of latency, you can do an awful lot of telephony on it without too much quality degradation. And so people are always surprised that when they use voice over IP, that it is in general surprising to them how good the quality is compared to what their perception would be. Although, I need to mention straight away, you will probably never see voice on the internet of the same quality as we see voice on the TDM network. It's just that the technical challenges just prohibit us from ever getting the absolute quality because you don't have guaranteed bandwidth. Circuit switch bandwidth is a basic limitation.
So talk about the rest of the system besides the voice over IP part. Asterisk can do all sorts of fancy things that conventional phone systems can do.
That's correct. Asterisk is basically a telephony server. It originally called itself a software PBX, but it really is more than that. And in fact, I tell people that functionally speaking, it's probably approaching the equivalence of a regular telephone company switch. That is, there are people now using Asterisk to run ITSPs, Internet Telephone Service Providers, where they're switching millions and millions of minutes a month with Asterisk. It basically does everything a PBX would do. It does many of the things that you would find a regular telco switch doing. And it also has a whole variety of features, a voicemail feature, a conferencing feature. It has features for recording calls, monitoring calls, running call centers. It has interfaces to most popular IP telephone protocols as well as to all the legacy telephony protocols. It can talk to PRIs, it can talk to T1s, it can talk to BRIs, it can talk to POTS. It can talk to an enormous number of interfaces. And its real success, I think, has come from the fact that it has such wide support for so many different kinds of technologies. And, of course, the last thing about it that people don't realize early on, but sooner or later run into, is the fact that since you're running Asterisk on a computer, there are interfaces between the running Asterisk server and the computer so that you can do things like run commands to talk to the Asterisk server or send commands from the Asterisk server. So one of the things I did at a tutorial here on Tuesday, I have a open source motion detection program running on a webcam at my house. I also have the house rigged up with X10 remote control so that I can turn on lights and turn off lights. And so one of the applications I showed with Asterisk is that I have my motion detection software hooked up to my Asterisk box. And so I sat in Portland, Oregon, and on a virtual terminal back to my X10 controller back home, I turned on a light next to a poster. The motion detector was focused on the poster. As soon as the light flipped on, the motion detector freaked out, and I had programmed to call a telephone sitting in front of me on the desk where I was here in Portland. And before the webcam image had refreshed to show the light on, the phone had rung with the message that there was an intrusion at my house. That's one example of about 100 different things that we've done to interface Asterisk to other things in the outside world.
So how does an Asterisk system connect into the conventional phone network with all of its phone numbers?
There are a variety of ways it can be done right now. There are several companies that make specific PC-based, that is PCI-based and USB-based hardware that basically speaks IP on one side and speaks to telco signaling on the other side. Digium, the company that sponsors Asterisk, makes a line of those cards. Sangoma makes the cards. There's a company in Europe that makes cards that work with BRIs. Or as an alternative, there are a number of gateway products out there now made by a number of companies, naming a couple MediaTrix, Audio Codes. Sepura makes a product, and what they do is that they're basically telephone PSTN gateways. They have telephone connections on one side and then SIP connections on the other side. So Asterisk picks up the SIP. SIP is the that's the session initiation protocol. Thank you for the reminder. But it basically, Asterisk has a stack that speaks a variety of voice over IP protocols. And so these gateways speak PSTN on one side and then SIP on the other side, and Asterisk sees the signaling coming in that way. So there are, I would estimate, probably 20 or 30 different products out there right now that one could use tomorrow to interface Asterisk to the legacy telephone network.
What kind of cost savings are some people seeing with Asterisk? Is it all over the map, or is it possible to generalize?
I generalized earlier. I probably would get shot down by this by some telco people, but several people have told me that they think that their return on investment on Asterisk systems compared to legacy PBX hardware is in the weeks to low number of months. And my estimate would be that function for function wise, probably 15 to 20% of what you would spend on a legacy system. There are other savings to be gained from switching your long distance minutes out. Right now, in any kind of decent quantity, one can buy long distance minutes for 2 cents or less. And in fact, if you buy carefully, you can get long distance right now for less than a penny a minute in quantity. And so I have seen people who have $200-$300 a month long distance phone bills who think they're getting a deal at 6 or 7 cents a minute from one of these other carriers. And when you suddenly take that 6 or 7 cents a minute and go to a penny and 3 tenths or 8 tenths of a penny a minute, for people who use volumes of minutes, that adds up pretty quickly. So there's a lot of different ways in which it can pay back. And of course, this is the future of telephony instead of the past. And there's a value to that that will be realized gradually over time.
What's the learning curve like, and how much skills do they need to bring with them?
Well, ideally, it's a nearly impossible set of skills to find in someone, which is a pretty good background in IP and a pretty good background in telephony. Because it inherits its paradigms from the world of telephony, it is nearly impossible to really run an Astra server and get all of its potential out of it if you don't understand some of the telephone terminology. And in fact, one of the things that I was charged with as I began the book was to answer the two most commonly asked questions that Digium's technical support people at that time identified to the editors that they get asked. And the first one is, what's the difference between a telco office and a telco station? And the second one is, what's the difference between call termination and call origination? And all of my presentations start there, because I tell people, even though this is a new world and it's not the same as the old legacy world, the terminology and most of the paradigms, and certainly most of the expectations of the users, are derived from that world. And so that's probably the biggest limitation that the average open source geek has when they start playing around with Asterisk is, oh my God, you know, what's this signaling stuff? What's this DTMF stuff? What's this termination and origination stuff? And so I'm focusing part of the book on trying to bring the telco terminology in and make it understandable to the IP person, because in general, I would say the Asterisk camp is made up of people who either tend to come from telco who need to be primed up for the IP world, or people more commonly from the IP world who just find the telco world to be full of argot and strange terminology that doesn't make intuitive sense.
What differences do you see as far as Asterisk adoption worldwide? Do you see more uptake here in the U.S., or do you see more in Europe? How about Asia, and how does the various telco policies around the world affect the ability of people to bring Asterisk in?
Well, two parts of that question need to be kind of separated. One is that there is great interest in Asterisk in many countries where the current telco monopolies are the worst in terms of the prices they're charging people. But along with that, that same cohort of countries is probably the set of countries where it's the toughest in terms of regulation to use voice over IP. My guess is that there are probably lots and lots and lots of people who are using voice over IP in places where it is illegal, simply because this is so new that in those countries they're flying totally under the radar. For monopolies that are run by the government, where the pricing is absolutely horrible, I expect that there are going to be a lot of fights over this, because a person can really, once one has come up to speed with some of the technology that underlies Asterisk and has gotten familiar with the way that Asterisk works, it really does come kind of close to being able to just replace entirely a whole telephone switch. And at that level, we're finding people, again, of somewhat dubious legality in terms of the environment that they're working in, but putting an Asterisk server in along with an internet connection and then completely doing away with their local POTS service that they're getting in the country that they're working in. Asterisk also supports internationalization to an astonishing degree. The prompting messages and all of the ring indications and things like that, I don't know what the count of countries is, but one can configure an Asterisk server on the fly to operate in a polyglot mode so that you can have the same server at the same time serving up prompts in French, in English, in Spanish, giving dial tone indications for appropriate countries in 3 or 4 different country indication schemes, and it has been internationalized. The community is all over the world. There is a huge group of people working on Asterisk. 2 or 3 of the core developers, I believe, one is operating in Sweden. There are several in Germany. There are people in Holland. And so internationalization has been a part of Asterisk right from the beginning. And ultimately, my opinion is that this is a case of the horse being out of the barn. The technology people have gotten so far ahead of the regulatory people that by the time the regulatory people wake up, it's too late. Nobody's going to be using their phones anymore.
How large is the Asterisk community today?
And it's pretty hard to estimate, and I don't have the figures at hand to be able to tell you in terms of downloads. They had a conference last September in Atlanta, which they were expecting that they'd get a couple hundred people to come in and talk about Asterisk and talk about Asterisk technology. And I believe they sold out every seat that they had, 600-700 people. And in general, Asterisk is one of those things that appears to be in the early phases of an exponential growth cycle. I mean, there are people who are estimating that there are anywhere from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of Asterisk installations, and it's very painless once you've gotten on to how to configure an Asterisk system. I run probably 15 or 20 systems, and I'm not typical, but it is typical for people after they've been playing with it for a while to realize, well, my goodness, I could put an Asterisk server here, and I could put one here, and when you can run it on platforms that only cost $60 or $70, it becomes pretty painless just to go somewhere and put in an Asterisk server locally. And so, hard to estimate, but I would say probably somewhere in the 5 to 6 figure range right now.
Are there any signs of innovation on top of Asterisk as a platform, people building things that run on Asterisk and add value?
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, lots of people are doing ITSP operations on Asterisk. But in addition to that, there are people doing conferencing services where that's all they're selling is conferencing services using Asterisk underneath it. There is an Asterisk distribution that called Asterisk at Home that comes on an ISO image that you just burn onto a computer, and when it boots up as a running Asterisk server. And so there are all kinds of people who have done creative things with that. There are the Sugar CRM platform has been integrated by many people with Asterisk, and is in fact a sort of mini version of that is available right now, from what I understand, with Asterisk at Home, which allows approaching turnkey customer relations management systems integrated with the telephony that boots up off a machine in a native mode. So there are a number of companies that are doing some pretty exciting things with Asterisk. It's pretty hard because a lot of times they wrap the Asterisk up and you don't know that's what's underneath it, because it is a kind of a quiet workhorse, and because it has standard socket interfaces to the native system that it's running on, it's kind of hard to even know it's there oftentimes doing things for you. But because of its ease to interface to the native system it's running on, it is really painless. There are Asterisk interfaces in Perl, in Java, in PHP, in JavaScript. There's all these different ways to script things with Asterisk. It also has a CGI-like mechanism called AGI, where you can actually write scripts in this language and run them in a dynamic fashion. And so people are running IVR systems. I actually have an IVR application of my own that allows me to inquire as the state of my network, which hosts are up, which are down, which gateways are operating, get to pull statistics off the gateways, pull them in and read them back to you, and things like that. And so there's a lot of activity in that space. It isn't real easy to tell how much of it has Asterisk running under the hood, although there's a subset of the Asterisk developers community that has become pretty expert at looking at a product and guessing by its fingerprint whether there's Asterisk running underneath it. And they kind of take some pride in outing different packages that have Asterisk running in stealth mode inside them.
You're a computer science professor. Is there any reason to believe that Asterisk is any more or less scalable than the traditional telephone system?
That is the topic. In fact, if you looked at the Asterisk developers list that was being discussed to death even today, there are Asterisk integrators right now who are claiming that they can routinely do 5,000 seat to 10,000 seat installations of Asterisk. So I think the answer to that is that Asterisk is probably going to wind up in the enterprise just as much as it is in the small office, home office market, and that carrier grade applications will be able to use Asterisk as well. And I know that they have licensed Asterisk to a number of vendors who are intending to use it in some very energetic and very grandiose plans. And I don't have all the details of that, but I know that Asterisk is pretty robust. It is very, very, very solid in terms of staying up. Asterisk, when generally speaking, most of us only take our servers down when we upgrade the software on them. So it's a very stable platform to develop on and has seen tremendous uptake just in the last 4 or 5 months.
Will there eventually be a video form of Asterisk?
That's already being worked on. Their Asterisk has all the hooks to do video along with audio. There is a protocol that was done by the creator of Asterisk called the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol, which is IAX or EEX, which has built into it full video capabilities. And there, in fact, have been a number of people who have been playing with the IBM X10 phone line. I can't tell you exactly what they call it. There's a company called X10 that has a video phone, a soft video phone product, and a number of people have that running right now and integrated with Astra so that they can make video phone calls back and forth. And video is just another data type for Astra to switch. You can send text, you can send URLs through Astra, and you can send video. And I mean, really, it has the capability of any kind of media format a person could imagine being exchanged between the endpoints, because we no longer have the limitations of the PSTN.
What about chat?
Well, there are some people who have done a bunch of stuff with that as well. Asterisk has some hooks for presence that are being worked on, and there are, in fact, speaking of chat, one of the early little example applications of Asterisk was playing an interactive multi-user networked game with Asterisk that involved the keypad, and I believe even you could use a monitor because you can send data along with the calls. And so, for instance, the CRM hooks do that by basically doing a database lookup based on the caller ID and then send a URL to the station. If the station can display the information, pop, you've got it up on the screen as soon as the call comes into your agent through the call queuing system. Asterisk has a full call center. I wouldn't call it a full call center, but a very capable subset of call center applications built into it as well. Calls can be queued up, you can play announcements to them, you can have agents with a variety of policies that the agents use to choose which agent picks which call, and so there's a lot of exciting things. And so the presence thing, I can give you an example of that. One demonstration of presence with Asterisk features, there's a Bluetooth interface to Asterisk, and so people with little Bluetooth presence devices on have demonstrated moving around an office space in and out of different offices. And as they move into an office, calls aimed at that person will ring the telephone in that office. As they move out and go into another office next door, when they walk out the door, any calls will go to their voicemail. And when they walk into the next office, Asterisk knows that they're there, and then the phone will ring in that office.
Have Asterisk clients been developed for virtually anything with an IP address, including IP telephones and any other device that has a speaker and a microphone?
Yes, sir. Their Astra supports, basically through the SIP channel, Astra supports most of the popular soft phones. It speaks all of the major IP telephony protocols. It speaks SIP, it speaks MGCP, SCNI, SCCP, which are somewhat related to one another. It speaks H323. And so basically, if a phone has one of the standard internet telephony protocols behind it, Astra can speak to it fairly painlessly.
What kind of open source license is Asterisk provided under?
It's provided under the GPL, but it is an interesting, from the developer's standpoint, it has an interesting twist to it that has been the source of much discussion and some acrimony, and that is that Digium asked people who contribute code to the Asterisk code base to disclaim their code so that Digium can use that code in proprietary products that they make on the side. And their justification for that is, of course, that they gave away under GPL their primary intellectual property. And since everybody's got to eat, and Asterisk is being supported by a professional staff of programmers that Digium maintains for them, that's the justification for this. But there are a number of, I guess I would call them GPL purists in the crowd, who feel that that is not the way to do it. And there is a lively kind of continuing debate in the Asterisk community as to whether that disclaimer does more good or more harm, or whether it's the appropriate way to play things. But I think I'm fair in saying that the general community sees this as a way of paying back Digium and Mark Spencer in particular for having created this tool, which is really the product of the kind of genius that Fred Brooks talks about in The Mythical Man Month, that you need a single mind to conceptualize something like this. And I think we're lucky to have had that product happen, and it's a small price that we pay for the kind of quality that we have in the product.
What do you think of Skype?
Oh, boy. Well, other than the fact that it's evil incarnate, Skype is closed. It is proprietary. It does everything in an encrypted fashion so that no one, no user, no administrator, no one can tell how it's working. Skype has a fairly unpleasant association with some peer-to-peer tools that have been known to do bad things to people's computers. All computers that run Skype are part of the Skype network, and you have to let Skype's network use your computer for however many cycles and whatever purposes you want. And my pet peeve of all pet peeves is that Skype particularly breaks the internet protocols and does a bunch of nefarious things with port 80 to get around firewalls. You can't stop Skype with a firewall, because to do it, you have to stop web traffic. And to me, that is reason enough for anybody who hears my words right now to throw out your Skype clients, because ultimately, if everybody did what they're doing on the internet, we wouldn't have an internet that would be usable, because the protocols wouldn't be respected to keep the internet operating in some semblance of order.
Can you encrypt Asterisk phone calls?
You certainly can. That's one of the features of the EECS protocol, which is in general what is used between Astra servers on the internet, and it has native hard encryption built into it so that any two Astra endpoints can choose at any point to go into a completely encrypted mode. And I've to the ability that I have of testing this, it seems to be very, very solid, and it seems to incur almost no performance penalty. And so, yes, it has encryption built in right now to the EECS channels, and of course, it operates fine in VPNs and other environments as long as you don't try to send the traffic in TCP. That's for voice over IP-centric reasons. IP traffic needs to be UDP and not TCP.
Can you dial 911 from an Astra service?
In about 400 different ways, you certainly can. The Astra dial plan is a virtualized dial plan. So I could, for instance, and of course people will immediately realize that this is a massive double-edged sword, I could set up my Astra box when I dial 911 to pick up virtually any telephone interface that I can reach anywhere on the PSTN. Which is both good and bad. It means that I can decide to hook my Astra box to a telephone that's been provided for me friendly by some third party, but it also means that it's possible to have some wild things happen, like an emergency call that's done in Washington, D.C., ringing into a PSAP in Monon, Indiana, which is definitely not a good thing. And my prediction is that eventually a VoIP-style 911 system is simply going to have to be created. It's going to have to be maintained by the users, because the notion of a fixed relationship between a telephone number and a site is rapidly dwindling with number portability, even in the PSTN, and that what's going to have to happen is that there's going to have to become a virtual overlay on top of the 911 system. The responsibility is going to have to be passed on to the end user. You'll have to make sure that your phone is talking to the right PSAP if you really do want protection via 911.
What's the easiest way for somebody to get started with Asterisk?
Easily, it's Asterisk at home. There is a distribution out there easily found with Google. It's a CD ISO image that you simply burn onto a CD. It boots itself up, guides you through a bunch of questions about the hardware you want to interface it to and what you want to do with it, and bingo, at the end of it, you have a running Asterisk system. I have never used it because I do things at a different level than that would be, but I have several of my clients who have picked it up and done things with it, and the response has been overwhelming, that it is something that you don't at that point need to learn all the jargon. You don't really need to learn anything because it guides you through it. Of course, you give up flexibility and you give up configurability to the fine-grained nature that I would perhaps want out of it. But that distribution is there today and is up and available for people and has probably been the major reason for many of these installs going, because it's so easy to get going.
What's the name of your book and when will it be out?
Well, the book's name hasn't been settled on yet. We had a name, and then for marketing reasons, the people above, the editor and I, changed their minds. And so we're working on a name right now. We're hoping to have the copy in press sometime during the mid-fall period, and that would put it out on the bookshelves sometime in the early part of the next year.
Thanks for speaking with me today, Brian.
My pleasure entirely. Thank you.
That's it for this time. This is Scott Mace at OSCON for Opening Move at IT Conversations. See you next time.
You've been listening to Opening Move with Scott Mace. Our audio content is delivered by Limelight Networks, the content delivery network for online broadcasts, music, movies, and software downloads, taking the cost and complexity out of internet distribution, on the web at www.limelightnetworks.com. IT Conversations is listener-supported, so please contribute to our tip jar. 100% of your donation will go to our team of volunteers who produce these programs for you in their spare time. The website producer for this program was Vinayak Hegedy. Post-production audio engineering by Jay Yeary. My name is Doug Kay, and I hope you'll join me next time for another edition of Opening Move with Scott Mace on IT Conversations.